Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
Welcome on September 11th to All Marine Radio. So 19 years later, you know, what are your thoughts? And, you know, I was thinking about that actually laying in bed this morning, September 11th. I mean, it would change my life. It would change the life of my family. It would change the life of my kids. Ultimately, it would give birth to this. It would change the lives of my friends. It would change the lives of a lot of our Marines. It would, it's changed a lot of things. And so, you know, I don't know that you could talk about that day without talking about that day, right? So where were you? What were you doing? And I was going into work to do my radio show. And I was getting ready to go on the air, I think at 9 o'clock Central Time. And I'd heard news reports that there had been a plane crash into the World Trade Towers. And we'd all heard that growing up, you know. B-17 flew into the Empire State Building, you know, blah, 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 blah. And then I remember salespeople had a TV on in their little room where they had all their cubicles. And there was about a half dozen of them. And so I stuck my head in. And I said, hey, what's going on? And I said, are they showing any video of that? And I remember seeing smoke coming out of the World Trade Tower. I think it was tower number one, I'm not sure. And but it was a clear day. Wasn't a cloud in the sky. And then it was like, well, what kind of plane was it? Well, they're saying that it was like, you know, they think it was a passenger plane. And I like a Cessna? No. What? And so, but the information, you know, it's like, well, that can't be right, right? That can't be right. So you're standing there watching, and this would be the last day I ever did a radio show where you did not have a TV monitor in the studio. Yep. And so standing there watching the TV when the second plane hit, and then that realization that it's not an accident. Somebody's doing this on purpose. And then, you know, then the reports of the, you know, the, of everybody being ordered out of the sky shortly thereafter. Then the reports that another, you know, plane had impacted the Pentagon, and the video, seeing the video of that. Another report that, you know, there were planes headed for the White House and for the Capitol. And just a crazy day, right? And so I went on the air live that day, and I did my show, and you just slowly, you know, that morning, just a slow, understanding that somebody's attacking your country and you don't know who it is. And just that, you know, and again, I think, if you're at all in the military or, you know, you've ever defended your country, there's just that sense of we need to go find it, who this did, and we need to kill him. And so got off work and we went to Mass. And I want to say it was standing room only in the church. Pretty amazing. St. Michael's Catholic Church in Grand Forks, North Dakota. Built by Irish railroad workers, of all things. That's why you have a in the land of Saint Stanislaus and Norwegians and whatnot. You have Saint Michael's in the middle of it, and so the so we went to church as a family, and so you know that day obviously changed everybody's lives. I think the sight of that day, that still to this day is, you know, you talk about trauma and how it's forever emblazed into your brain. The sight for me, that I'll never forget are, you know, and the memory I have is those people didn't do anything to anybody. They weren't combatants. They just got up and they went to work like they did. They didn't harm anybody. They didn't deserve that. And then you saw them. You saw them jumping off buildings. And I remember, and I'll never forget that. You know, the video that you saw, you know, what is that? And then it's another one of those realizations that, oh, my God, those are people who can't stand the heat anymore, and they're jumping to their death. And then, you know, in the days that followed, you heard their 911 calls to their family telling them they loved them. And it's just horrible, 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 horrible day. And, again, a day that, you know, would change, you know, a lot of people's lives forever. I mean, they didn't know to the extent that it would change their life, but it would change their lives. I think of Gold Star families, and I think, you know, what they think about today. You know, here, you know, we were at the house, and this happened, and that happened, and he or she was, you know, was watching TV, and, you know, he or she was, you know, 13 years old, you know, but 5 years later, they would enlist. And they would go fight, and they would die for their country. And I think it was, so I think of Gold Star families today that, in addition to the people who died today, that, you know, that the events that this day puts into motion ultimately mean the death of over 7,000 Americans, the wounding of close to 60,000 Americans. And I'll tell you what, and so I think in retrospect, the more I've talked about this here on this program, the more I've learned about what we did and how we did it, I think When I think about September 11th, I'm just filled with a profound sadness because I think that we had a lot of leaders that absolutely failed the nation. They absolutely failed their oath to the nation because they didn't do what they should have done. A lot of them, you know, wore uniforms, did not do what they should have done in Afghanistan to start with. And it's a, I think it's really sad. Guys like Tommy Franks, guys like General Myers, General Pace, they did not serve the country well. And so they didn't do Afghanistan as they should have done it. And then the whole issue of Iraq, a war that this country didn't have to fight. And lo, 16 years after we went over there, we're still there. And the president's announced this week that, you know, drawing our troops down to 3,000. And, but, you know, the destabilization of the Middle East, the death of, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of people in Syria, in Iraq, and then the destabilization of Europe in the Mediterranean area where all these people have fled to, all has, gets laid at the feet of people like George Bush, Don Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney, Paul Wolfowitz, Condoleezza Rice, Colin Powell, all of them. And I think it's incredibly sad that in response, somehow or other, we could coexist with the Soviet Union for 60 years. But after September 11th, the thing we have to do as a nation is we have to go to war with Iraq. That's what we have to do. And it's just, and you look back and you look at all the death. You look at, yesterday we did this show about suicide, right? You know, and veteran suicide, specifically combat veteran suicide, it's no small issue. And I think one of the things I've learned is that, you know, a lot of those guys don't kill themselves because of what they saw in combat, but that is a significantly contributory factor in overloading them and sending them down a road that ultimately they don't come back from. And then you have the people that sent us down that road writing books and making millions of dollars and, you know, living on their ranches and, you know, whatnot. So I have a message for them today. Go the fuck away. Okay? Stay hidden. Nobody needs to hear from you. You've done enough damage on this planet for one lifetime. So go the fuck away. So, yeah, today as I look in retrospect, I mean, a day that September 11th is a beginning of sorts for a whole series of events. You know, and there's a saying that what is it? Adversity doesn't create character, it reveals character. I would make a similar point relative to being a leader. And, you know, adversity reveals leadership. And we had so many people fail. So many people fail. The nation. And I don't have an answer. I don't have an answer to how you turn that around. You're watching it today. Donald Trump and Joe Biden will both go to Pennsylvania to go pay their respects to the passengers from Flight 93 that went down in, what, Shanksville, Pennsylvania. The whole let's roll, you know. Had heard the news And it said, yeah, we're not going out like that. We're not going to allow that to happen. And so Joe Biden and Don Trump will both head up there to campaign, to use this backdrop as a political event. Nice. Nice. So that's where we're at today. And so, you know, sad, right? Sad. And again, I don't know, you know, we've watched this same failure of leadership, I mean, throughout this year. You know, this year of COVID, this year of, you know, racial violence. And then you've seen mayors not be up to the challenge for what's in front of them, not living up to their right, their oath to support, to protect the people who they swear that oath to. You have looting and rioting that's completely out of control. And so, you know, to me, we have some major issues, you know, that in the United States that we have to deal with. And their leadership and their, you know, the truth. We can't have a truthful discussion about race, and we need to. We can't have a truthful discussion about, you know, leadership. And we have leaders that just are horrible. You know, again, if you thought the last round of riots in Minnesota was bad, wait till you see the next round of riots. Yeah. When those police officers are found guilty of, you know, either very minor crimes or are completely exonerated, what's that deer in the headlights mayor going to do? What's he going to do when they are judged by, you know, 12 members of their community and are found not guilty? What's he going to do then? He's going to come out and cry again while his city burns? And we've seen it in Seattle. We've seen it in Portland. And then the worst part about that is when they allow it, it inspires others to do the same thing. So, yeah, so as I look back, I mean, to me, and we've done a lot of content about, you know, the decisions made after September 11th. How do you get there? You know, the decision not to jump the 82nd Airborne into Tora Bora and use overwhelming force, so it might cost you American casualties. I mean, what the hell? That's what you have those units for, right? Not to put the 10th Mountain Division up there, and not to cut off Pakistan, and then get Osama bin Laden, and then get the hell out of Afghanistan. I mean, explain to me why. Explain to me why. And so, and then again, all the innocent people. I mean, imagine the innocent people that woke up that morning in Fallujah, you know, in Ramadi. And little did they know that that event would destroy and kill a lot of the people in their cities, would destroy their cities, and forever change the way they lived. And they're just ping pong balls in this whole thing. They didn't do anything. They're just trying to survive. They're born and raised in Western Iraq, and they happen to be Sunnis, and same tribe as Saddam Hussein, blah, 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 blah. And so it goes. So, I mean, to me, I think in retrospect, the overwhelming sentiment is sadness. Is sadness. And again, I'll, you know, forever be proud of my service and the Marines and sailors and soldiers and the airmen that I served with, because I mean, to me, it's the most inspirational thing I've ever seen in my life. But I think the leadership surrounding those days is pathetic. Absolutely. Positively pathetic. But I don't want to dwell on that today. I don't want to dwell on that today. I do want to play you a couple things that I tend to play every September 11th. And I saw these during a thing called Prayer for New York. And the first thing you're going to hear is a speech by a reverend by the name of Calvin Butts. And this event occurred in Yankee Stadium. It was for it was a memorial service for families that had lost somebody or had somebody missing, because it had been 12 days after this happened. So it happened in Yankee Stadium, and they had speakers from every religion. You had Oprah Winfrey was the MC. Mayor Giuliani was there. Governor Pataki was there. Bill Clinton was there with his wife, Senator Hillary Clinton. And so it was speeches by predominantly religious leaders, some civic leaders. Senator Clinton did not speak. You had a couple of military guys speak. But I was sitting, it was a Sunday, and I was sitting in my bedroom in Grand Forks, North Dakota, and I was getting ready to watch a football game. And as I was channel flicking, I saw this because it was on C-SPAN. And I thought, well, I'll watch a few minutes of it. I watched, I want to say, 3 hours of it. I was transfixed by it. So, and out of all the things that came out of that, this is something that I tend to play on this day, because I found great inspiration in the words that Dr. Butts says. And then you're going to hear the Boys and Girls Choir of Harlem sing "We Shall Overcome." And I interviewed the guy who's the soloist in it, and I'll tell you about that song here. But this is Dr. Calvin Butts here on a Friday, on a day that we remember, September 11, 2001, and everything that is meant to our culture, to our friends, to our families, and to not only Americans that we've never met, but to people of other nations that we've never met, whose lives will be forever impacted or taken because of what this event unleashes on the planet. So we remember that stuff today. And this is Dr. Butts.
Reverend Dr. Calvin Butts.
This memorial service is for you, and I hope that at this time you will take the hand of the one who is sitting on either side of you. You may know them, you may not. But if we are going to stand in unity, we must unify by at least the joining of our hands and hearts. And I want you to turn to your neighbor, and I want you to tell them, together, we'll get through this. Together, we'll get through this. Now, let me tell you what I mean. In the harbor of New York, there stands a lady. She is the Statue of Liberty. And I thank God today that while I regret and mourn the loss of life and the destruction of the World Trade Towers, that those cowards did not come near Lady Liberty. On her tablet, listen. On her tablet, I'll pin the words that have come to symbolize our nation. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuge of your teeming shores. Send these, the homeless tempest tossed to me. I lift my lamp beside the Golden Door, and I want to pause now and thank the mayor of the city of New York for working so hard to keep that door golden and shining and bright for all of the United States of America. But listen, let me tell you this. We have said together we will get through it because we have come through it before. Madmen have assassinated four of our presidents. We came through it. Madmen have assembled missiles against our country. We called it the Cuban crisis. We came through it. Someone erected a wall in Eastern Europe trying to divide East from West, but the wall came down. We came through it. And even though now we're facing cowards who hide behind the terror of secrecy, I want you to know that as a nation, even though the president said this will be a hard fight, there was a great poet who said, harder yet may be the fight, and right may often yield to might. Wickedness a while may reign, and Satan's cause may seem to gain. Oh, but there is a God who rules above, and he's got a hand of power and a heart of love. And if I'm right, that God will fight my battles. We'll get through it. I take my hat off to the firefighters and the police officers and the emergency workers and all of those brave women and men. And listen, I want you to know, America, and I know that our governor and our mayor and our president will see to it. We will build a monument. Their names will be etched in granite. There will be an eternal flame burning. But I'll tell you what's more important than that. And that is that we show them, as they look down upon us, that we are not afraid today. Get back on the airplanes. Go back to work. Rebuild America. We are not afraid today. We are not afraid. One last thing. I have said together we'll get through it. We will get through it because we are the United States of America. And I will say this. We have died on every battlefield. We died in Normandy. We died on every battlefield. We've died in the deserts of Arabia. We've died on every battlefield. We've marched through Tripoli. We've died on every battlefield that the world has ever known. And our beloved sisters and brothers lost their lives on the battlefield of the World Trade Center. But listen, they are patriots of America. And before we leave here today, we must sing, "Oh, beautiful for patriots' dreams that sees beyond the years. Thine alabaster cities gleam undimmed by human tears. Oh, America, America, God, mend thine every flaw and confirm thy soul in self-control, thy liberty and law. Together we will get through it because we are the United States of America. God bless America."
I don't know how you listen to that and not get fired up. Obviously, he's a great orator. But I remember sitting there that day, you know, and I just, I don't know, I probably yelled or some shit. My kids probably were like, "What is he doing back there?" Which is not something they say infrequently, but I just remember being so fired up for what he said, because until I heard that, everything had been so somber. There hadn't been, you know, I think what it is to be an American, which is to overcome. You know, it's what this country has always been about. Overcome oceans to get to a place of freedom. You know, overcome a new world to carve it out. Overcome, you know, the great expanse of the central and western part of the United States to build a nation. and everything that entailed. And then, you know, in America, you know, as its industrial and economic might gains, you know, it ultimately takes its place during World War II as the dominant superpower in the globe. I mean, and then, you know, through things like the United Nations that nobody else would conceive of, no European country would conceive of that. You know, that's an American invention. You know, the Bretton Woods Agreement, the Marshall Plan, NATO. Those are all things that I think are quintessentially American. And, you know, in this time of COVID, I have to tell you that I'm particularly proud of the school that that whose football team I've loved since I was a little kid, and that is the University of Notre Dame. And in reading about what they've said about bringing schools, kids back to campus, they said, hey, we've done this at every crisis in our history, to include the Spanish influenza. And we found a way to get through it, which to me is quintessentially American, finding a way to do it. We're not going to stay at home. I mean, let me just tell you, it's you know, yesterday, and I'll get to the story, it's in the Wall Street Journal, but, you know, the businesses of New York went to the mayor, and when I say businesses of New York, right, I'm not talking about, like, Eddie's Supermarket, although Eddie's Supermarket might have been a part of it. I mean, you're talking about major, major economic power saying you've got to reopen New York City, and you've got to do something about the conditions in the city relative to the police. This is reaching a catastrophic phase. And so to me, because, you know, you've essentially abandoned the city and you've laid down, you're not fighting through this. So to me, and that's what Notre Dame is finding a way to do, is, and that's what we need to teach our children. That's why, and I'll take this back to the Marine Corps, the decision not to run the PFT for Marines, come on, man. We fought at Chosin Reservoir, right? We prevailed at Tarawa. We fought through Khe Sanh and all the battles in the, you know, in Vietnam. And we can't find a way to take a PFT? Come on, are you shitting me? So to me, you know, what you teach in a crisis to your children, how did we do it? Well, you got to teach them how to get through it, how to fight their way through it, how to work through it, how to be smart. So anyway, but that was the first person I heard stand up and say things like that. You know, and let me play the last like 30 seconds of it, right? The whole thing's about 6 minutes. So let me get to the 5 minute and I'll play the last like 40 seconds of it. So here you go. Dr. Butts right at the end with the big finish, no less.
And our beloved sisters and brothers lost their lives on the battlefield of the World Trade Center. But listen, they are patriots of America. And before we leave here today, we must sing, oh, beautiful for patriots' dreams that sees beyond the years. Thine alabaster cities gleam undimmed by human tears. Oh, America, America, God, mend thine every flaw and confirm thy soul in self-control, thy liberty in law. Together we will get through it because we are the United States of America. God bless America.
Yeah, I, without a doubt in my mind, I probably punched a hole in the wall or something like that. But no, I'll never forget that speech. And then this piece of music, which I'll play today instead of the national anthem, I heard either shortly before or shortly after this. And it is We Shall Overcome. Now, there's a story behind this, and I interviewed the soloist, and I've talked about this before, but I'll tell the story again. I see this song, right? So it's all these kids from Harlem and their choir. And they're a famous choir. They go around the world and perform. And the soloist is older, though. He's probably somewhere between 20 and 30. And I will tell you the story, right? I'll tell you the story about the interview after you hear it. How they chose this particular verse. Evidently with We Shall Overcome, it's kind of like Eternal Father. There's like 900 verses that go with it. Okay, and so he and the director of the choir were going through it. I'll tell you the story about how they decide on this is the verse that we have that we have to sing. And so, but I want you to listen to, and so the verse they sing is "We Are Not Afraid." Okay, and so, but I want you to listen to the background noise in Yankee Stadium, outdoor venue, and you have all these people that are just who've lost family members that are there. Mourning. And I don't know how many thousand people were there, but Yankee Stadium wasn't full, but there was a lot of people there that day. But so I want you to hear when he sings that, and I'll talk about what he said about when that was happening while he was singing. So this is the Boys and Girls Choir of Harlem singing "We Shall Overcome."
Thank you.
I came in, listen to that now. Jeez. The his name is Terrence. I wish I could remember his last name. So I was so excited. I don't know. His name is Terrence Wright. I should get him on. I should track him down. Maybe he still works for them. But he was like the assistant director of the choir. And he was a soloist that day. And so he sat down and I called up the in fact, you can find the video. If you do a search on We Shall Overcome 9/11 Memorial Harlem Boys and Girls Choir, Yankee Stadium, September 23rd, 2001. I actually paid for the DVD years later. But I just saw it on YouTube. That's how I got his name. And so I called the choir probably on Monday, and I said, could I interview, you know, whoever sang that song? And they said, oh, well, we'll leave Terrence a note, and he can call you. So he called me back, and I said, hey, I saw what you did on Sunday, and would you come on my radio show and talk about it? And he said, oh, I'd love to. And he's just a wonderful guy. And so he talked about what they had been through over the course of about 10 days as they sat down to select the music and what they would do. Prior to that, you know, they had families that lost people. He had lost friends. He said, it's had this huge impact on us here in the city. And everybody, he said, there's nobody that doesn't know somebody. And so, and he said, you know, and it's not like the CEOs or anything like that. He said, you know, it's couriers, it's people that worked in food places, it's, you know, people that happened to be downtown that day. And so, so he and the choir director, they're okay. So what verse do we sing with, you know, with We Shall Overcome? And he said, they're flipping through them. And he said, he got to We Are Not Afraid. And he looks up and he said, this is it. And he hands it to him. And he says, We Are Not Afraid. And he said, the director of the choir said, let's go. So he said, we rehearsed it. I said, well, were you ready? Could you hear it? And he goes, oh, yeah. He said, you know, when you're performing, he said, you're trying not to react. He said, but I think he said, that wasn't normal. Right? He said it wasn't normal because it was so powerful. And he said, but I wanted to do it justice. And so I tried not to get distracted from it. You know, he said, but I could hear it. He said, and I get goosebumps thinking about it because, you know, as an artist, you know, you try to do things that you hope will be meaningful and inspire people. And he said, and that day, you know, was one of those days in my life. He said, I will never forget. I said, well, what's the response been like? And he said, oh my God. He said, now you're from where? I said, I work in Grand Forks, North Dakota. It's right on North Dakota. He said, like, I would never come in contact with you. He said, I've had people all over the world who saw that reach out to me. You know, and he said it's been a bit overwhelming. And he's just a wonderful, wonderful young man. And so I mean, you know, the sights and sounds of what echoes in me from September 11th. But those are a piece of music and one a short speech that when I think about September 11th, those things hop into my mind very quickly because Dr. Butts, you know, to me, he called on, you know, the ghosts of America who settled this country, who came to this country, you know, the people that have fought through so many different things. in this country, from, you know, the Civil War to, you know, through the Depression, through the Dust Bowl, the Civil Rights Movement, all the different things that, you know, the United States has been through as a nation, and that keeps this, you know, this experiment in democracy going. But I will tell you this, I wonder if we still have enough of those people, because what I see relative to leaders is not very impressive. So, you know, I say a little bit of a prayer that somehow or other that we begin to find leaders that are up to the challenge to be the custodians of this experiment in democracy. Because I don't think what came after September 11th, you know, I don't think what came after, if I particularly focus on, you know, our response to September 11th, I think that the majority of that response was ill-conceived. And I think people died who didn't have to die, and that's not supposed to happen. That's not supposed to happen. We were supposed to learn that lesson coming out of Vietnam. So, with that said, good morning to you, and we'll check the weather. We'll check the weather right now, and then in the second hour coming up, a friend of mine is going to join me. He and I did a radio show together. His name is Greg Lotus. Greg, I met in North Dakota. He played for the New York Jets. He's a football player. He's just a gigantic human being. And comes from Thunder Bay, Ontario. And Greg and I start doing a radio show. He gets injured playing for the Jets. He has to have surgery on his knee. And his knee gets infected. And because he wasn't drafted, he was a undrafted free agent that signed with the Jets and then ultimately makes their football team. Bill Parcells was a coach. He tells a great story about Parcells when he calls him in to tell him he's made the team. He says, "You have no business being on this team. But you're one of the meanest human beings I've ever seen in my life, right? And that's why you're here." And so, he's a great friend of mine. And so, but what happens is because he's an undrafted free agent, right? When somebody tells you to shut up and color, you do that. So he goes and tells him something's not right with my knee. "Oh no! It's just a post-op stuff. You know, don't worry about it. Just go do your rehab. Go shut up and color." So he does. So he's got an infection in his knee, and it goes on and on and on. He finally, a friend of his sees him, and he's lost a lot of weight, and his friend says, "Hey, you need to come see the doctor for the New York Giants." And long story short, he tells Greg, he said, "Hey, look, your knee's been infected since the surgery, and we need to operate." And Greg's like, "When?" And the doctor says, "Like tomorrow." He said, "Greg, I'm going to try to save your leg." And Greg's like, "What are you talking about?" And so he has surgery. Well, since then, you know, Greg has walked with a cane. So he went from playing in the NFL to, you know, being disabled for the rest of his life. And, but, you know, he's a great guy. He and I started doing this radio show that we called McLotus. And so he's a smart guy. And he's a funny guy too, so you're gonna meet him. He's been on the program before. Some of you will remember him, but Greg's he's an awesome guy, and like I said, he's a great friend of mine. So since the chef can't be with us right now, a very very acceptable substitute for the chef will join us, and that is my friend Greg Lotus. So with that being said, we'll check the weather here. All right, currently in Quantico, it is cloudy and 79. Down the coast at Marine Corps Base Camp Lejeune, it is partly sunny and 84. 29 Palms, it is sunny and 69. Pendleton, sunny and 68. Camp Smith in Hawaii, it is dark, cloudy and 72. Okinawa, clear, dark and 81. In the Northern Territory of Australia, Darwin to be exact, it is clear, dark and 76. Down in the Southern Hemisphere, and in Oslo, Norway, it is cloudy and 54. Where Marines from 2nd Marine Expeditionary Force are working. Here at the home of All Marine Radio, it is partly sunny and 63. Now, I'll tell you what, if you go outside, I mean, the smoke from these fires in California is amazing. You've seen pictures of San Francisco, but, I mean, there's ash on the patio. Napa Man, who I might have to rename. Yeah, Napa Man, he moved to Wisconsin. Yeah, pulled up stakes, threw everything in the covered wagon and headed east. He might be like Badger Man or Wisco Man. I don't know. He gave me a weight bench, and there's ash not covering the weight bench, but you can see the ash on the weight bench that sits in my backyard. And visibility probably isn't a quarter mile here in Costa Mesa right now. So, yeah, it's pretty amazing. Anyway, we're not going to take a break yet. So let me check some news headlines here, and then we'll take a break, and then Greg will join us. Greg, you know, one of the cool things about having him on is, you know, he follows the NFL like nobody. So the NFL getting going again, and so we can talk about that. He'll have to refresh my memory. When he was with the Jets, was before or after 2001? I don't rightly recall. So we'll talk about that, where he was on September 11th. And again, Greg's story is a post-traumatic winning story, you know, and it's his wife, Heather, is from Western North Dakota. She's a beauty. You know, Heather's not afraid to talk a little shit either. So Greg can't work. He's disabled, right? He's goes from playing in the NFL to can't walk. And can't be employed. I mean, and then Heather gets breast cancer. And it's a tough story. It's a tough story. So he'll join me here in a few minutes. So we'll do some news headlines right now. And top story in Stars and Stripes. U.S. Embassy to challenge Germany over attempts to tax American troops. And you wonder why Germany is at the bottom of the list relative in my most favored nations. Like, come on, man. Department of Defense schools failed to report serious incidents involving students, including sexual assault, the inspector general reports. How can that be? Next headline. Biden says U.S. maintains small force in the Middle East, has no plans for major defense cuts. So that in the news. Pentagon reportedly estimates that the F-35 budget plan is running about $10 billion short through 2025. It occurs to me that those estimates are always low. Pentagon will reverse the shutdown order for Stars and Stripes. So, Secretary Pompeo, in a speech to ASEAN, which is the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, said, "Don't let Beijing walk over us in the South China Sea." Pretty President Trump has nominated a new ambassador to Afghanistan who was a skeptic of the war. William Ruger, a conservative foreign policy expert who supports the full withdrawal of American troops from Afghanistan, has been nominated by the president to be the next U.S. ambassador to the nation. So that in the news. China and India have actually been exchanging gunfire across their border. They've agreed to disengage thousands of troops along the border. So China, on their charm offensive around the world, they continue. I just want to go over one story in the Wall Street Journal. If I can find it. Here's a funny headline, right? Not so funny for the people they did it to, but China injects hundreds of thousands with experimental COVID-19 vaccines. Major pharmaceutical companies have been deliberately slow-rolling vaccines to make sure they're safe before giving them to human candidates. Not so in China. Well, there's a shocker, right? Now, I want to see if I can find the story about New York City. Give me 1 second. I can't find it. Oh, here it is. Headline. Business leaders urge Mayor de Blasio to stop New York City's decline. Letter cites public safety and quality of life issues. The mayor reiterates the need for borrowing authority and stimulus. More than 160 business leaders, including executives at Citigroup, MasterCard, NASDAQ, have signed a letter to Mayor Bill de Blasio warning of the city's deteriorating condition in the wake of the coronavirus pandemic and the growing anxiety over the public safety, cleanliness, and other quality of life issues. In a letter sent to the mayor on Thursday, the leader said the pandemic has devastated the city's economy, causing high levels of unemployment. They urged the Democratic mayor to restore essential services that have been cut from the budget that he and the New York City Council recently approved. The budget reduced or eliminated services like garbage pickup and graffiti removal, as well as shifted $1 billion in funding away from the police department. The city still faces a $9 billion deficit over the next 2 years and may have to lay off 22,000 government workers in the coming weeks. Meanwhile, the city has seen a surge in violent crimes and thefts over the summer as officials loosened restrictions to prevent the spread of the coronavirus. In a four-week period that ended Sunday, the city recorded 55 homicides, up 49% from the same period last year, according to New York Police Department data. The city also had 222 shooting incidents during those 4 weeks, more than double the 90 shootings a year earlier. Quote, "We need to send a strong, consistent message that our employees, customers, clients, and visitors will be coming back to a safe and healthy work environment," the business leader's letter said. "People will be slow to return unless their concerns about security and the livability of our communities are addressed quickly and with respect and fairness for our city's diverse population." Yeah, I think the mayor of New York City is more interested in winning a popularity contest than he is in being an actual leader. So that in the news, that stood out yesterday, broke squelch for me. From U.S. forces in Korea, from their commanding general, North Korea is showing no signs of regime instability. So there's been much written about Mr. Kim's sister, blah, 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 and CG. Of all things north on the Korean Peninsula, says not so much. The top stories in Marine Corps Times today, top story. General Mark Milley, in his remarks today, called out Nazis, communists, jihadis in his remarks devoted to September 11th. And in a speech, General Berger said it cannot complete its mission without women or minorities, the Commandant of the Marine Corps said. And then the top five stories in Early Bird, and then we'll take a break, and then I'll get Greg Lotus on the horn here. Number one, that day, veterans share where they were on September 11, 2001. Again, I mean, for many people, you know, our grandparents and our parents talked about, you know, where they were on December 7th, you know, Sunday. You know, coming home from church, you know, if you're on the East Coast, you know, it was later in the day. In the West Coast, it was morning still. And, you know, gathering around the radio, hearing it out in the street, and then going home or being in your car and somebody saying something. Or, you know, it's not like you could listen to your, you know, cassette deck in 1941. So, you know, you'd listen to the radio, the AM radio. And if you were in your car, you heard it in your car. So, you know, September 11th is for many people who did not experience Pearl Harbor, you know, or did not experience John Kennedy's assassination. You know, where were you when, you know, Martin Luther King's assassination? You know, so these huge events in the nation's history, you know, where were you? What were you doing when you heard? So that's the top story. Number two, 9/11 was a defining moment for a soldier who will receive a Medal of Honor tomorrow. So that's a story. You know, for a lot of people that were younger that would ultimately fight in Iraq and Afghanistan, they were in grammar school and middle school when that happened, which is interesting. And so this Medal of Honor will be presented to Sergeant Major Patrick Payne and for his actions in Afghanistan. And he's quoted saying, if we didn't action that target, then the hostages would probably have been executed. A career Army Ranger and Delta Force operative who will receive the Medal of Honor for his actions during a raid in Afghanistan. He talks about where he was on September 11th. I was a senior in high school. I was in a class and we turned on the TV after the first plane hit. That was a defining moment. Once the towers fell on 9/11, that's when I decided I was going to join the military and I was going to serve in the 75th Ranger Regiment. That's how Rangers say that shit too. The 75th Ranger Regiment, which has a great legacy. So, and again, you know, you probably have never heard of that, the action that he's talking about, that he will be the Medal of Honor recipient for, because it's Delta Force and they don't say shit. Next headline, artificial intelligence, dogfight, triumph, a step towards human-machine teaming. It's interesting how this is being articulated now, human-machine teaming. The infrastructure doesn't exist for these things to operate independently, and let alone operate independently in a contested environment where your data links are going down and things like that. How do you control them once you don't have any contact with them? You know, can you engineer it so they control themselves to include return to base? Well, that's an interesting discussion. And then the final story in the top five is Biden says U.S. must maintain a small force in the Middle East, but has no major plans to cut defense. He also says he has, you know, in his policy relative to China, sounds an awful lot like our current policy. So interesting. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, Greg Lotus will join me here on a Friday, and we'll see what's going on with Greg. He's an interesting guy and a good guy. So don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.